Coming up, mystical matters from the Bible and beyond, conceived, written, and illustrated by Menachem Weinreb. Welcome to 613 Books Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Dean. And if you like to read a variety of books with authentic Jewish values, we read you loud and clear. My featured guest on this episode is Menachem Weinreb, the creative director of Mishpacha magazine. You might recall that he was also my featured guest during the summer of 2023 when we previewed his new book, Mystical Matters from the Bible and Beyond, when it was almost completed, yet already a work that I predicted on air would be the next big thing. And now, Menachem's book is a reality and available for purchase from his website, amudart.com. That's AMUDART.com. Welcome back, Menachem Weinreb, to 613 Books Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor again.
So in our interview, when this book was in its manuscript stage, we talked about how this book is not just a list of letters of the alphabet drawn artfully and a corresponding creature. With every entry, you inject fascinating facts, mythical hashtags, and plenty of emojis strategically placed among the words. And your word choices, too, are playful and often funny. All of these elements make reading Mystical Matters of the Bible and Beyond more of an experience than just a book of illustrations. So, as author and artist, was combining all of these moving parts exhilarating or exhausting?
So, I think a lot of it came in different stages. I think that starting the book was a challenge that I had set to myself that I was going to do like a 30-day challenge. And each day was going to be where, since I learned, I was going to dedicate it where I was going to do a A to Z of like different things from the Bible, things that interest me. And so that was exhilarating in the sense of the joy of learning and gathering all the information. I think that after I did gather it and putting everything together, the fine tuning was exhausting, meaning I'm more like in a creative type of person. So I enjoyed the creativity. And just in general, even when it comes down to the details, I work at Mishpacha magazine as the creative director. So like when it comes to like a lot of the fine details, the technical things, I usually kind of want to pass that off to different people. So the creative aspect was exhilarating, and the actual like proofreading and then making corrections and like that was exhausting. Like to actually put a book together is exhausting. And then I find that the distribution, which is not part of the creativity, but it's still such a necessity, that's exhausting.
Yes.
I have to give the book over, since I did it with Kickstarter. So I have to give it, you know, over to the people who supported me, which I was so thankful for. But because the war now, what's going on in Israel, everything I send with tracking. Like I don't just send it in the mail, just like go. And the Israeli mail is not necessarily known for being so great. And even in America, things get lost. So with all those things together, I was just like, you know, I have to pray that it gets there. And so like someone says, oh, I didn't get my book yet. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I sent it like 2 weeks ago. And they told me, you know, like it's just all these different things. And so that's exhausting because I'm not focused on the creative aspect anymore. I'm more creative, you know, focused on the technical aspects of getting a book out there and doing all those things. So, you know, it's a combination.
Right. And I heard within your answer, just the way you answered, it's as though you were remembering certain entries, right, that were particularly challenging. Is there one that came to mind as you were answering the question that, oh, this particular letter was hard or that illustration? Like what sort of was a particularly challenging entry?
That's interesting because there are some illustrations and entries that didn't even make it into the book.
Oh,
because I did start it. And yeah, so like E now is for Eliyahu, which actually I love now. Actually, Eliyahu is my middle Hebrew name. And originally it was going to be Eagle because when I was a kid, I remember hearing a tape where oh, in the future redemption, the Jewish people are going to be going on wings of eagles, like to Israel. And obviously with the invent of airplanes, people could understand what that means now. And then I thought there was like a medrash or chazal the rabbis would teach about this idea. And I looked. And the only source of on wings of eagle is when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. And a future redemption, I couldn't find. Mm. That could be just me that I couldn't find it. And I was like, I can't put this into the book. So I had this illustration. I had this whole thing written up that we're going to go. It was funny, you know, everybody on the wings of eagles. And, you know, so in the end, I had to take it out. And so that's exhausting. And then also there was another one. There's for J, which is Yericho. So I was like playing away because like J could be Jericho or it could be, you know, it probably could have fallen under Y also. But sure. There is Yofiel. There's a Malach that's referenced in the Zohar. And there is something. So I did write something up on that, but I didn't get so much info on it. And I think when it came to a lot of the different things in the book, I was, you know, worried even while I was writing it in terms of if it's going to be that so out there. So I did include one angel in the book and I was just like afraid to do too many, like to have two of them. So I took that one out. So even within the art of creativity, there was like, oh, I have to just cut that out and then go back to the drawing board. But I was happy because in the end, I love Jericho, I love Yericho, and I certainly love Eliyahu HaNavi, and I can't believe I didn't do Eliyahu HaNavi in the end. So I think that there was a certain, you know, like whatever, if you want to call it Siyata Dishmaya, divine thing that like Eliyahu did make it in, because like the very fact that Eliyahu that we say never died and he comes to all the circumcisions, the Brit Milot, and he like we have a Kisei Shel Eliyahu, like it's actually very fantastical, like very mysterious that we believe that is something that happens. Like, yes. You know, there's a mysterious plus one, you know, a mystical plus one at every bris.
Well, you know what else? I just wanted to mention, since we're talking about how Eliyahu figures into your book, there's a pop culture reference that pops up with the letter E for Eliyahu. There's a scenario you talk about from the book of Kings 2, chapter 2, about which you described Chariots of Fire. And until I read that, I thought Chariots of Fire was the Academy Award-winning movie released in 1981. So tell us a bit about the original from that section of E.
The original in terms of, Eliyahu HaNavi. Yeah, the chariot. Yeah, so it's that idea. I remember being in yeshiva. I remember learning with he actually lives here in Israel now. His name is Rabbi Gordon. He has a yeshiva, I think, in Telstone. And there's an idea, and also it's discussed in the book, there's a concept in Judaism called Pardes, which there's four levels of understanding that it's like Pshat, Remez, Soda, Drush, and Sod, and each level gets higher and higher. And then on the simple level of the passage in the Navi, when it talks about Eliyahu HaNavi, it says that he went up in a chariot of fire. Mm-hmm. And that's on the simple level, meaning that's just on the same plain level that like he went up and there's other deeper meanings to that. And I remember being so wowed that if that's on the most simplest level, then there's obviously a lot deeper levels of whatever that means. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, you know, it's an amazing thing that we just digest and take, okay, fine. So there's a person that went up in a ball of flames and a chariot of fire. And he never died, and he keeps on coming back. So that is something definitely I wanted to include in the book, and I'm happy that it was included because I think it's quite amazing, and it's quite something that we as a Jewish people, you know, hold on to and believe in, and to be explored a little. So I did that. Also, it's in that entry. Also talks about Eliyahu's trials within the king at the time, and his wife Izebel, which we right. You know in the English is Jezebel. You know, like that's definitely an English term like for, right. You know, a woman called a Jezebel. And, you know, what they tried to do, and they were hunting him down and they were trying to kill him. And he basically had to get out. And yeah, it's really a beautiful story about Eliyahu HaNavi. I'm just name dropping different things because I remember hearing Rabbi Tuvia Singer. Sure. He does Jews for Judaism. And I used to listen to his tapes back when people used to listen to tapes. And I grew up in some time in Pesach, so I got a lot. And I listened to a lot of his tapes. And he was saying that when Eliyahu HaNavi, he basically at one point said that the Jewish people weren't keeping God's commandments, and God had told him, Eliyahu, I have to tell you two things. One of them is that, no, that's not true, that there is a remnant of the Jewish people that are keeping the commandments. And number two is that you're fired.
Oh, God.
And that Elisha, his servant, his student, was going to take over.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why Eliyahu has to come back to every single Bris Milah to see and witness that the Jewish people are still keeping the commandments. And that's why he keeps on coming back in a certain way to witness that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So as you were saying before, with not only because of the Eliyahu entry, but you mentioned the word exploration. So one of the nice things about this book is at any level of a person's Jewish knowledge, Jewish background, they can read, and you do reference where it's sourced, the letter that you're speaking about and the story that you're speaking about. So it does offer, it's an invitation to the reader to explore more into whatever that mystical matter is on any given page. So that's a bonus.
Yeah, no, that was definitely intentional, because, I mean, it's so deep, and I can only do so much in this such short period of time. Like some of it, like I'm looking at the text and I'm like, oh, it's so small. Like there's not so much room, and some of that I really needed to have more room in, and I had to like edit it all out and stuff like that. That was a difficulty in terms of like we were talking about, you know, how can I get all the text in, you know, to make it funny and to make it interesting and to give over information so it's understandable.
Right. Right.
Also,
right.
I wanted people to know that I wasn't just making this stuff up. That was like, just, you know, that was important too. Like people would be like, what? There's like, you know, Esther sent a demon to Ahasuerus. Like what? Like what's going on here? Like, you know, I want people to say like, this is crazy. Let me look this up myself and to realize how deep we are.
Right. So let's give our listeners a preview of the experience that awaits them. I'm wondering if you could read for us the cover story, which is on page 33. It's the piece about the entry for the letter L and the Leviathan, which is the primary illustration on your book's cover.
Sure. I would love to. Just excuse me. I'm going to say Leviathan. I think it's easier. It just rolls off my tongue better for some reason.
Fine. No problem.
This entry is Leviathan. It's on page 33, and it starts, coming soon, the ultimate creature showdown. A legend recorded in Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar states that the fish that swallowed the prophet Yonah narrowly avoided being eaten by the Leviathan, which eats one whale each day. Folks, we're not talking pint-sized here. This humongo Leviathan is going to have a future face-off against something more his size, the ginormous behemoth, in this epic battle of the millennia. But hey, until Judgment Day arrives, God's keeping things interesting with some daily playtime with Leviathan in his daily schedule. Who needs Netflix when you have Divine Creature Entertainment? Sit tight and grab your popcorn, folks, because when these giant biblical creatures clash, it's going to be one whale of a show.
Okay, that's terrific. You know, I'd also like to talk about one of the surprises in your book, to me anyway, that includes your entry for the letter F, F for fox. And you write that foxes were used by Samson in the book of Judges, chapter 15. And it appears to me that this is where the term Firefox originated, the brand that in our modern times is a popular web browser. So please, if you could tell us a bit about this mystical Firefox.
Yeah, that's great that I actually have this opportunity to do this podcast, because I just made that reference because I thought it was funny in terms of Firefox. Like, I wasn't actually thinking that that was where they got it from, but I thought it was great. And so this tale, not to make a pun here, I said tale, about the fox is just amazing. The whole story of Samson or Shimshon, it's very hard to understand. The fact that he goes and marries a Plishti, you know, women, and goes over there and he knocks skulls together, and he's just larger than life figure doing different things. And at one point, he goes away from his non-Jewish wife, his Plishti wife, and he goes away because she had given over a secret, a riddle. And so he got angry at her, so he left her, and then we came back to his wife. He went to his father-in-law's home and he said, no, I gave her, you know, she married somebody else and I can give you another woman instead. And he got, you know, angry at that. They were Plishti, and because of that anger, he took foxes tied their tails together and put in between them fire, like a torch. Mm-hmm. And he let these foxes loose onto the wheat fields and the olive groves and the just the whole thing. It created like a chaos, like 300 of these foxes, and they just burnt the place down. And the people, they couldn't battle Shimshon or Samson because he was so strong. And in the end of the story, which is not in the book, doesn't have such a happy ending. The people killed the father-in-law and that woman. I'm saying, so the story itself is in Judges chapter 15. It's probably one of the hardest books for me, at least, to understand the story. But the idea of Fox was cool.
Yes.
And I wanted to include it because I think that not many people know this story, that he did this. Everybody knows that he had long hair and he was like someone right out of a novel, you know, one of these, like, you know, he looks like, you know, this strong person. But that, I think everybody, that's his reference. And I don't think many people knew about the story. And that's, you know, what you were saying before, is that there was a lot of interesting things in the book and that people could look it up and study more about it. And I think that's, you know, my goal, that people read this and be like, hey, this is so strange. I never heard this before. Let me go look it up. And that's why I give the reference point.
Right.
And so then people could study and look into the Torah more. And definitely did that for me. And I want it to be done for others.
Very nice. But I have a couple of questions about your book cover. One of them is that in the center of your book cover are the words Volume 1. So Volume 1 tells us a bit about how this might indeed be a series. And I'm just wondering if there's any ideas or motifs that you're working on?
Why not? Like, if this worked, then I would love to do another one. But it was also like a joke. Oh, God. I don't know. I just remember as a kid reading Mad Magazine. I don't know if anybody out there knows what that is. And I just like all these like just cheeky like things of making it seem like Volume 1, as if like there's like, like, is it going to be like, it's going to be greater than that. Like, there's like, this is Volume 1 of like 200 volumes that are going to come out. So in a sense, it was a joke. Like, and I love flags, and I thought it would look cool on the cover to write Volume 1 and have it in a flag. So it was a joke that way. Oh, that's really like the real reason. The second reason is that, like, yeah, I mean, I got great feedback on this book. I think that I would like to do more, explore more in this A to Z category. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there's definitely a lot more things out there that people could learn. I don't know if I'll be able to find another X. That was hard this time. But I think there's a need. And I wrote this book because I was thinking about what I would have wanted as a 12, 13-year-old kid, and what I loved, and all the funny things, and these cute little sidebars, and these cute little small illustrations. And I was sort of like writing it for my inner 12-year-old self.
I hear.
And, you know, and I would hope that this would be something that other people want.
Nice. You know, the other question that I want to ask about your book cover is that you did choose the Leviathan as the starring role of the book cover. There are other wonderful illustrations dotted all around the book cover. I'm just wondering why you chose that as the starring role for the book cover, and were there other ideas? Maybe another one was going to actually get the book cover, another illustration.
I love that question for the reason that it's great. So on a design level, because water and sky, so you could divide that into two in the sense that it's structurally, you could break it up, meaning so you have water and you could cut it in the middle. So it's aesthetically pleasing to see things like that, so that you could put text on water on the bottom and there could put text on top, and there's enough room because, like, let's say some of the other illustrations in the book, it's busy, right? So then that becomes too complicated to make that as a cover. It doesn't come across. But stylistically, you could place text in areas, because if you keep the, let's say, whale, you know, Leviathan in this case, centered, you could then structure text around it. Mm-hmm. And the way I drew it was yellow, and I wanted the book to stand out on the shelves. I wanted the colors to be yellow. Mm-hmm. A lot of the illustrations in the book, if you look, are not yellow, but other colors. And this one, yellow and blue, look great. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just great colors. Just like, forget about like the illustration, just in general, like yellow and blue really shine, or at least, you know, stand out on the cover. So that was the reason why I chose that one. Yeah, that's it.
Wow, thanks for giving us the inside scoop on how that turned out. And thank you, Menachem Weinreb, for speaking with me about mystical matters from the Bible and beyond on 613 Books Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me again. Really means a lot.
Menachem Weinreb's vibrant and whimsical artwork and designs can also be discovered on his Instagram handle at MEWeinreb and at Amud Art. You can contact Menachem either through his website, amudart.com, or by sending him an email to this address, contact@amudart.com. And in case you didn't write all of this down fast enough, just check out the show notes for this episode. It's all there for you. And that's what's on the shelf for this episode of 613 Books Podcast. I'm Heather Dean. Thanks for listening.
613 Books Podcast is produced and hosted by Heather Dean. Senior producer and director of operations, Greg Cohen. Consulting producer, Yisca Roth. Show announcer, Michael Doniger. Remember to like and subscribe to our show on your favorite app, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your own preferred app, and never miss an episode. You can find all episodes of 613 Books Podcast by visiting our website, heatherdeanproductions.com.